The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 2nd Canto, 1st Chapter, Text 11, given by Dhanavir Das Vanachari on April 4th, 1989, in San Diego, California.
O King, constant chanting of the holy name of the Lord after the ways of the great authorities is the doubtless and fearless way of success for all, including those who are free from all material desires, those who are desirous of all material enjoyment, and also those who are self-satisfied by dint of transcendental knowledge. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In the previous verse, the great necessity for attaining attachment to Mukunda has been credited. There are different types of persons who desire to attain success in different varieties of pursuits. Generally, the persons are materialists who desire to enjoy the fullest extent of material gratification. Next to them are the transcendentalists who have attained perfect knowledge about the nature of material enjoyment and thus are aloof from such an illusory way of life. More or less, they are satisfied in themselves by self-realization. Above them are the devotees of the Lord, who neither aspire to enjoy the material world, nor desire to get out of it. They are after the satisfaction of the Lord Sri Krishna. In other words, the devotees of the Lord do not want anything on their personal account. If the Lord desires, the devotees can accept all sorts of material facilities. And if the Lord does not desire this, the devotees can leave aside all sorts of facilities, even up to the limit of salvation. Nor are they self-satisfied because they want the satisfaction of the Lord only. In this verse, Sri Shukadeva Goswami recommends the transcendental chanting of the holy name of the Lord. By offenseless chanting and hearing of the holy name of the Lord, one becomes acquainted with the transcendental form of the Lord, and then with the attributes of the Lord, and then with the transcendental nature of his pastimes, etc. Here it is mentioned that one should constantly chant the holy name of the Lord after hearing it from authorities. This means that hearing from the authorities is the first essential. Hearing of the holy name gradually promotes one to the stage of hearing about his form, about his attributes, his pastimes, and so on, and thus the necessity of the chanting of his glories develops successively. I'll just comment on some of this and then we'll go on reading the purport. Here, interesting point that by hearing the holy name, gradually then one develops a desire to hear about his form and attributes and pastimes. This is natural because Krishna and his holy name are the same. Nama Chintamani Krishna Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha. And so when one hears the holy name or chants the holy name of Krishna, he's actually associating with Krishna directly. It is a direct experience. Although it is by the mercy of the spiritual master that one is able to chant, and of course one should hear the holy name from the lips of a pure devotee, still the experience is direct with Krishna. The example is given, just as one may utilize the help of glasses for seeing if he has defective eyes. The glasses are situated between himself and the object. Nevertheless, when properly arranged, he sees the object directly and he can personally relate to the object directly. Krishna has made himself very available. Kali Kale Nama Rupe Krishna Avatar, the incarnation of the Lord for the age of Kali, is in the form of his holy name. This is the most merciful arrangement. Krishna agrees to come and dance on the tongue of the sincere chanter. Krishna is fully there in his name, with all of his energies, with all of his pastimes. Just as there's no difference between Krishna's name, Krishna's form, Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's entourage, Krishna's paraphernalia. In the same way, the holy name of the Lord can fulfill all the functions of the presence of the Supreme Lord. However, we may not be able to fully realize them in the beginning, and that is why it's described here that in the beginning, one chants, then he becomes eager to hear about the form of the Lord. Naturally, we want to hear more about this person that we're chanting his name. No one would chant the name of someone for very long if they didn't know anything about him. If someone asks us, will you please chant the name of Mr. Kotovsky? We would want to know, well, who is Mr. Kotovsky? What is he like? Why should I chant his name? What are his characteristics? And before we would go on chanting Mr. Kotovsky for very long, we would inquire all these things, naturally. Aside from that, of course, the other factor is that by chanting the holy name of the Lord, one's heart becomes cleansed. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has described this, Cheto Darpana Marjanam, Bhavamaha Davagni Nirvapanam. The heart becomes cleansed of all impurities. Even if one has performed many sinful activities in this life or previous lives, which most of us can be sure that we have, that's why we have these material bodies. This is the advertisement that we have performed sinful activities in this body. So, no one is disqualified from chanting. It doesn't matter how sinful he is. No one can say, I've committed too many sins, I shouldn't chant. It's offensive for me to chant. There are some religionist people who have the theory that one should not say the name of God. In fact, even this argument was brought up to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that I think Balabhacharya brought this point up, that it's not proper for the wife to say the name of her husband in person. And we are all Prakriti, and the Supreme Lord is the Purusha, he's the husband, we are the wife, so therefore it's not proper for us to say his name, calling out his name like that. Proper etiquette. But he was replied by devotees of Lord Chaitanya that Sarv Damodar Maharaj, that in this case the husband, it's a fact, Krishna is the supreme husband, but he's requesting us to chant his holy name. So a good wife, a chaste wife, she'll certainly obey the instructions of her husband. And because it gives the husband pleasure, then naturally the wife will fulfill that, wants to please. How do we know that it gives the Lord pleasure? Satatam kirtiyam toma utantascha dridvata. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, here also, this is Srimad Bhagavatam, Shukadeva Goswami, who is a great authority and a great devotee of the Lord. He is the son of Vyasadeva, the incarnation of the Lord. And Shukadeva Goswami has a very special position. He was even requested by Lord Krishna himself to please come out of the womb. He was remaining in the womb as a self-realized soul. He had no interest. He fell into the category here of the self-satisfied by dint of transcendental knowledge. And therefore he remained in the womb up to 16 years. He figured, why should I come out? There's too much Maya out there. Better I stay here with, I won't have any bad association. So he didn't come out, and the father was very concerned. And so Vyasadeva, he was so concerned that he went personally to ask Lord Krishna, will you please come to my hermitage, to my house? So Krishna personally came there. There's a beautiful painting of that. And Krishna has come into the house, and he's there speaking to Vyasadeva's wife and speaking to the child in the womb. Oh, please come out. You won't fall into illusion. So, Shukadeva Goswami is a great authority. His relationship with Krishna is established, Vyasadeva. And he's saying here, he's recommending the constant chanting of the holy name of the Lord after the ways of the great authorities is the doubtless and fearless way of success for all, for everyone. That means anyone who's taking up a more difficult process is just unnecessarily laboring hard. There's no need to take up a more difficult process because this one, this simple one, this easy one, it works and it's sufficient. Even if one is a materialist, even if one is a devotee, already completely free, he's fixed up on the highest platform, he may be even a lover of Krishna, or even if one is an impersonalist, or one is desiring liberation. Sometimes devotees think that after some time of chanting, they graduate and they no longer have the need to chant their fixed number of rounds of the holy name. They think that I'm rendering service on the higher platform, therefore there's no need for me to be so strict. But Shukadeva Goswami is saying constant chanting of the holy name. This constant chanting means especially a certain number of rounds. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also fixed a certain number of rounds of chanting. And our spiritual master, Founder Acharya, has fixed the number for the members of ISKCON at 16 rounds minimum. One can chant more than that. One can chant 25 rounds or 32 rounds or 64 rounds. But at least 16 rounds every day. This will fulfill our obligation for constant chanting of the holy name after the ways of the great authorities. The greatest authority in the chanting of the holy name was Haridas Thakur, the Namacharya. He chanted 192 rounds a day. But we cannot imitate Haridas Thakur. He was chanting 16 hours a day of the Maha Mantra. The rest of the time he was engaged in preaching work and other kinds of divine activities. But we cannot do that. Certainly not by imitation. But we can follow the ways that we should chant. And Srila Prabhupada has given us that. I think Mukunda Maharaj could even confirm how Srila Prabhupada in the beginning, he wanted the devotees to chant 64 rounds. Is that correct, Maharaj? Were you there when he requested that? So, could you tell us how that happened? I always wanted to know how that happened.
So I was just going to chant At the very least, you must chant 16 rounds.
Maharaj, but how did you get the idea of 16? Because you were already chanting that for over a year. So where did the number 16? Oh, I see. So originally in the beginning he said 16. And then it. I see. Then it was. Oh, I see. Thank you. So there you have it. At least 16. I'm going with the purport. This process is recommended not only for the successful execution of devotional service, but also even for those who are materially attached. According to Sri Shukadeva Goswami, this way of attaining success is an established fact, concluded not only by him, but also by all other previous acharyas. Therefore, there is no need of further evidence. The process is recommended not only for the progressive students in different departments of ideological success, but also for those who are already successful in their achievement as fruit of workers, as philosophers, or as devotees of the Lord. Srila Jiva Goswami instructs that chanting of the holy name of the Lord should be loudly done, and it should be performed offenselessly as well, as recommended in the Padma Purana. Loudly, this is an important point. That means loud enough so that we can hear it. So when we chant japa, it should be audible, at least to our own ears. There are many groups of chanters, even Vaishnavas. We were riding in the train with some Vaishnavas in India just recently, and they were also chanting 16 rounds. It's interesting that they're disciples of one of Prabhupada's godbrothers, or disciples of the disciples of Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers, but somehow or other the number had been set also at 16. But they were chanting silently. They were not speaking loud. You could not hear it, so they were moving the beads. But that is not as beneficial as chanting loud enough, audibly to hear, because then the tongue is working, the ears are engaged, the mind is engaged. When one hears the sound of the holy name, the vibration, it's easier to fix the mind. Otherwise, chanchalam himana krishna, the mind is as restless as the wind. It's very difficult to control. So we know how difficult it is to control, even when we chant audibly and we hear it, what to speak if it's silent. So it should be loud enough to hear and try to concentrate the mind on the sound vibration. This is Jiva Goswami's statement. One can deliver himself from the effects of all sins by surrendering himself to the Lord. One can deliver himself from all offenses at the feet of the Lord by taking shelter of his holy name. But one cannot protect himself if one commits an offense at the feet of the holy name of the Lord. Such offenses are mentioned in the Padma Purana as being 10 in number. So, that means that if one offends the Lord, he can be freed by chanting the holy name. Or if he's committed all kinds of sins, he can be freed by chanting the holy name. But if one offends the holy name, then he cannot be relieved. That's what it says here. That one cannot protect himself if one commits an offense at the feet of the holy name of the Lord. So it's a special dispensation for the fallen souls that the holy name has come. So we should not offend the holy name. If someone is in prison and he's committed many sins, but then the state very kindly sends to him a very nice gentleman, someone who's come there to try to rectify him. So even the sinner gets a chance. This person has come, he's trying to help him, he's trying to give him all kinds of facilities to help get him out and make him into a proper citizen again. But if the criminal attacks that person, or offends him, or tries to steal from him, or attack him, then the state gives up. This person is incorrigible. We've done everything. We even sent this wonderful representative, and still he won't take it. So in the same way, the Lord has come. Same thing with the devotees. An offense to the lotus feet of a pure devotee is not forgiven by Krishna. One has to get the forgiveness of the devotee himself. The first offense is to vilify the great devotees who have preached about the glories of the Lord. We should be very cautious about vilifying. Vilifying means to blaspheme those devotees who have preached the holy name of the Lord, despite whatever deficiencies they may appear to have. It's better to avoid blaspheming them or criticizing them. Naturally, everyone in the material world, every activity may be covered by some sort of fault, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. And we may even find some spots in the sun. If we look closely, we can see. Those who are expert, they can see that there are some spots in the sun. So someone may criticize, the sun has spots. What useless. The sun is not useless. The sun is very valuable. He's performing such wonderful service for the whole universe. So to criticize the spots in the sun is not very intelligent, not very liberal. Or we may even point out the pockmarks on the moon. The moon has some pockmarks. Still, the moon is so important that it is giving the vegetables the juice and it is giving them vitamins and nutrition. All the plants are dependent. So we should not criticize even if there are some pockmarks. Similarly, in the case of Vaishnava, even there may be some seeming faults. Devotee should overlook them if he wants to fulfill this, if he wants to avoid this first offense. Be very cautious. The second offense is to see the holy names of the Lord in terms of worldly distinction. The Lord is the proprietor of all the universes, and therefore He may be known in different places by different names, but that does not in any way qualify the fullness of the Lord. Any nomenclature which is meant for the Supreme Lord is as holy as the others because they are all meant for the Lord. Such holy names are as powerful as the Lord, and there is no bar for anyone in any part of the creation to chant and glorify the Lord by the particular name of the Lord as it is locally understood. They are all auspicious. And one should not distinguish such names of the Lord as material commodities. When Srila Prabhupada went to Iran, the devotee in charge there told him about the habit of the local persons, Muslims, that they would, in the evenings, they would go up on the roofs and they would chant the name of Allah. So the devotee asked, so should we change them, try to get them to change and chant Hare Krishna instead? He said, no, let them chant Allah. That is a name that they have understood of God. It is a name for God. So it is transcendental. So we should not criticize others who chant different names of God, provided they're actually names of God. But if someone's chanting some name of a demigod and thinking that it's as good as God, then this is offensive. Kali, Kali, Durga, Durga, Shiva. No, they are not God. Therefore, to consider those names equal is offense. The third offense is to neglect the orders of the authorized acharyas or spiritual masters. The fourth offense is to vilify scriptures or Vedic knowledge. The fifth offense is to define the holy name of the Lord in terms of one's mundane calculation. That by chanting so many times I may get this kind of result. In other words, there's so many different ways we may calculate the effect. For example, someone may say, well, I can get rid of so many sins if I chant, or it's as good as some other kind of activity. Or the example of that Brahmin who spoke with Haridas Thakur. Haridas Thakur was saying that just by the nambas, even not pure chanting, clearing stage of chanting, dim reflection, one gets liberation automatically. So this Brahmin, he was named Gopal Chakravarti, Chapala, Paul Chapala. He could not imagine how it is possible because he was making material calculation. He said people are practicing yoga and meditation for thousands of years to get liberation, and you're saying simply by chanting one time like this, it's not possible. He could not imagine that because it was a material calculation. So that is an offense. And we know because of that offense and others, he had some difficulties. The holy name of the Lord is identical with the Lord Himself, and one should understand the holy name of the Lord to be non-different from Him. The sixth offense is to interpret the holy name. The Lord is not imaginary, nor is His holy name. There are persons with a poor fund of knowledge who think the Lord to be an imagination of the worshipper, and therefore think His holy name to be imaginary. Such a chanter of the holy name of the Lord cannot achieve the desired success in the matter of chanting the holy name. The impersonalists are like this. They consider that they take up the chanting as a means to reach an end. Their end, the end that they're looking for, is to merge into the Supreme, to become one with the Supreme. So they think, well, this mantra will help me. No, they're chanting, but they're actually thinking that there's no such thing as Krishna. This is just a good means for me to achieve my goal, which is to merge and become one. So this is an offense, to think that the Lord is imaginary. The seventh offense is to commit sins intentionally on the strength of the holy name. In the scriptures it is said that one can be liberated from the effects of all sinful actions simply by chanting the holy name of the Lord. One who takes advantage of this transcendental method and continues to commit sins on the expectation of neutralizing the effects of sins by chanting the holy name of the Lord is the greatest offender at the feet of the holy name. Such an offender cannot purify himself by any recommended method of purification. In other words, one may be a sinful man before chanting the holy name of the Lord, but after taking shelter in the holy name of the Lord and becoming immune, one should strictly restrain oneself from committing sinful acts with the hope that his method of chanting the holy name will give him protection. This offense is, of course, very dangerous. We should not think that I've taken initiation and I've already chanted, and of course I can chant again tomorrow, so even if I commit some sinful activities, it'll be neutralized tomorrow. But this is not... This is very offensive. In fact, this is worse than the sin itself. In other words, that sin, which has, everyone knows, has very heavy reactions. We've read in the fifth canto what kind of reactions there are for different kinds of sinful activities. So if one thinks that I'll commit the sin, but it's not so bad because I can chant again tomorrow, and I'll be pure, I'll be freed. It doesn't work that way. This is a big offense. This is trying to take advantage of the Lord's kindness. And it's a very defective mentality. The eighth offense is to consider the holy name of the Lord and His chanting method to be equal to some material auspicious activity. There are various kinds of good works for material benefits, but the holy name and His chanting are not mere auspicious holy services. Undoubtedly, the holy name is holy service, but he should never be utilized for such purposes. Since the holy name and the Lord are of one and the same identity, one should not try to bring the holy name into the service of mankind. The idea is that the Supreme Lord is the supreme enjoyer. He is no one's servant or order supplier. Similarly, since the holy name of the Lord is identical with the Lord, One should not try to utilize the holy names for one's personal service. In other words, one should not take up the chanting for some political purpose or some personal desire. That is an offense. Because if one thinks, well, I'll chant Hare Krishna and this way I'll get elevated to heaven, or I'll get a very nice wife, or I'll become elected in the assembly. This is offensive chanting. It's not pure. Or if one thinks that the chanting is as good as performing other kinds of rituals in the Vedas, other kinds of pious activities. It's explained that if one thinks that even performing 1,000 Ashvamedha yajnas is equal to chanting even one time the holy name of Krishna, he's an atheist. He's an atheist. Because how can you compare any kind of material piety to Krishna's holy name, which is completely spiritual? The ninth offense is to instruct those who are not interested in the holy name of the Lord, even after hearing of the transcendental nature of the holy name. The effect of chanting the holy name of the Lord is perceived by the chanter as liberation from the conception of false egoism. False egoism is exhibited by thinking oneself to be the enjoyer of the world and thinking everything in the world to be meant for the enjoyment of oneself only. The whole materialistic world is moving under such false egoism of I and mine, but the factual effect of chanting the holy name is to become free from such misconceptions. So are there any questions on this verse of the purport? Any of the points? Yes?
It says there that the one who is the holy name is not to be the one who is to protect himself. So, if we are the one who is
in another place it says, if one is committing the offenses to the holy name, the only recourse is to just go on chanting continuously and try to avoid the offenses. There's nowhere else that one can take shelter, in other words, except the holy name. So, by chanting, because here it's explained that in whatever condition one is in, the recommended process is to go on chanting. So even we're committing offenses now, in our neophyte stage, we're still holding on to so many material attachments and so many things. But if we go on chanting, sincerely, trying to improve, trying to avoid the offenses, then the holy name will purify us. Yes. That's a nice question. We should not vilify someone who is engaged in preaching, but at the same time, a devotee sees things as they are. He sees this person has unfortunately become again allured by the material energy, has given up the strict process of bhakti yoga, or I don't know exactly what type of person you're referring to. Of course, there's different levels. But if he's fallen from the strict standard that Srila Prabhupada gave us, then we can understand he's been victimized by the material energy. There's no need to blast him. But that is a fact. And if one is committing the offenses to the holy name by again becoming attracted to the material energy, as the tenth offense is, one, despite hearing the glories of the holy name, continues to maintain material attachments, then this is an offense. So it means his chanting, it's good that he chants and he should continue, but his chanting is offensive and therefore it will take longer for him to reach the ultimate goal. This was Prabhupada's statement in Hawaii. There were some devotees chanting. They liked chanting, but they had a difficult time working under the directions of the society. So Prabhupada said they should go on chanting, but it will take a long time for them to reach the full results. Yes? Well, we should see that anyone who's chanting the holy name, that is good. And anyone who's trying to preach, to elevate people, that is also very good. However, it's best if we can do it in a way that Srila Prabhupada would be most pleased with. Srila Prabhupada was never displeased if he found someone chanting the holy names or trying to preach Krishna consciousness. He would encourage them. But at the same time, he would always try to encourage them to work with ISKCON. Isn't it? We always see that. Even his godbrothers who had their own societies, even Gaudiya Math members or anyone, as a matter of fact, yogis, gyanis, karmis, scientists, everyone, he would try to get them to cooperate together so that we could have a greater effect on saving the world. And at the same time, by that association. The problem is that in this material world, without strong association, we're easy prey for Maya. So he wanted to give them all the opportunity to associate with ISKCON, because he considered ISKCON the best. He definitely considered the ISKCON devotees to be better than others. Now that we shouldn't become proud, that it's only because of his mercy, because of his exalted position, he gave us the sublime, easy, perfect process. And if we follow that, then we're actually on the topmost platform. I remember Srila Prabhupada was speaking with some, there was a gentleman, Indian gentleman, who was criticizing the devotees for, they were falling asleep during the japa. And he was saying that they're defective, therefore they should practice Hatha Yoga, I will teach them. And he was very insistent. Srila Prabhupada said, "That is all right. If they go on chanting, they will improve." He said, "No, no, let me teach them Hatha Yoga. It will be so much better for them. And they won't, it will get the errors." And Prabhupada said, "It is not required by chanting." And the man was insisting. Finally, Prabhupada said, "Yes, I know they are deficient, but still they are better than anyone else." So, that is why, despite all of our deficiencies, if we're sincerely following or trying to follow Srila Prabhupada's instructions, working cooperatively, then we encourage everyone to work together with us, to associate with us. And if they cannot, then we wish them well in their chanting and their preaching. We hope that they will be able to follow Srila Prabhupada's instructions anyway. Because that will be good for them and it will be good for the other people as well. But it doesn't mean that we have to. It doesn't mean that we have to recommend it for everyone. It is not recommended. But if someone cannot do anything else, then we wish them all the best. A devotee is not envious of anyone else who's trying to chant and preach in his own way. Does that answer it? Any other questions? Yeah. Doesn't say something slowly. Slowly? Because I was with Prabhupada and he said you can chant very quickly also. And he demonstrated Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Yeah. Softly. It doesn't have to be singing. And sometimes. The main thing is in japa that it's loud enough so that one can hear personally. For one's personal benefit. So was there a question there, whether it should be loudly?
So apparently there's
Possibly. Main thing is to hear, and Srila Prabhupada has advised us to chant loud enough to hear. At least hear ourselves and others also. As far as chanting speed, well, that's up to the chanter. Main thing is to be able to concentrate the mind. One can chant quickly and concentrate and hear all the syllables. That's important, 32 syllables. Otherwise, one should not go so fast. Sometimes devotees go so fast that they don't even hear the syllables. Sometimes they go so fast they leave out some words too, to go make it get done quicker. So we should be attentive to hear 32 syllables. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.